Welcome, friends, to another great week of Grace Radio. Welcome to the Grace Hour. We are a daily program that dives into believers' daily challenges and helps them to learn his faith in a practical way. My name is Pastor Ronaldo Brown, and I'm in the studio today with Pastor Schaller. And this week and today, we'll be talking about homosexuality, which is a highly charged and controversial subject in the world and in the church. I think a lot of Christians tend to lean one of two ways. There is no middle ground. Unfortunately, there is no balance. Toward the far right, there is an aggressive, firm, almost antagonistic position of hate in some people's minds, not often, but a lot. To the far right, to the far left, there's one of compassion, but compassion to the point of subjectivity and compassion to the point of ministry without truth. It tends to be more permissive than it is profitable. So there's those two sides, and many Christians fall on one side or the other. We're going to talk about it this week. We're going to get into it as much as this week allows us to do so. And I would ask you to pray for this particular week, this program as well, as this is a very sensitive subject in a lot of believers' hearts, particularly now because it's very sensitive in the mind of believers, especially a lot of our young believers. I mean, they're being inundated throughout the world and throughout society, through television, through media, through their friends, about how the world should think, how the church should think, how a Christian should think about homosexuality. So we'll talk about that today. I'll just begin with this. The church believes that homosexuality is a sin. That type of lifestyle is sinful. We believe that. But at the same time, we don't point out the sin and not love the sinner. We can hate the sin and not hate the sinner. So we love them, and we love anybody else who lives in sin. But we don't agree with the lifestyle. We don't agree with the sin. And strictly because the Bible teaches that. It's very clear. And there's a lot of layers to that about how the Bible teaches that. And I would say, Pastor Schaller, the first layer is it corrupts the social, spiritual structure of the scriptures as we know it. From the very, very beginning of the Bible, the social structure has been set. There's five institutions given to man. The first institution is free will. The second institution is marriage. The third institution would be family. But their second institution given to man by God was marriage. And it's very clear in that institution that it's a man and it's a woman. And that was God designed. So as Christians, the way we understand that, God's perfect design was a man and a woman. And homosexuality directly corrupts that. It says that that design that God designed according to our Bible is changeable, is correctable, is voidable. So from that perspective, if you get that order wrong, you can't find God's order later. You can't change God's order in the beginning of his order and then down the road decide we're going to update it or it's going to evolve, because the order of God does not evolve. So, Pastor Schaller.
Okay, yes. I'm reading from a theologian, Richard Hayes. Given the fact that Paul, in common with every other early Christian writer who addressed the issue of homosexuality, apparently regarded all homosexual activity as immoral, we still have to decide how to continue the authority of his opinion in the present time. So we are Bible believers, and we look for the mind of God on this issue. So in Romans 1, Paul says that humankind is in rebellion against God and consequently plunged into depravity and confusion. In the course of the analysis, homosexual activities are explicitly and without qualification identified as symptomatic of that tragically confused rebellion. Thus, it is possible and methodologically appropriate to take Paul's account, both in general and with regard to its particulars, as revealed reality, an authoritative depiction of the human condition, The text then would inform a normative evaluation of homosexual practice as a distortion of God's order for creation. So if we would take Paul's writing and just have the authority of God's mind on the subject, that's a good starting point. Because what society is saying is one thing, but are there areas where society has accepted things that were actually wrong? Mm-hmm. Like, wasn't slavery one?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, it was wrong, but society embraced it. So is society always correct?
No.
No, it isn't.
No. And maybe we have to be careful that we don't let society dictate what is right and what is wrong to the church. I think it's Isaiah chapter 50, verse 20. There's going to be a time where society is going to call what is right wrong and what is wrong right. And we can't find our moral will from society. We have to find our moral will from the very express will of God in the Bible.
Yeah. Now, the problem is that when society is embracing a sin as being normal and they call it normal and there's actually propagation, this is, you know, we say propaganda when something is being communicated large scale, and we can actually study that objectively, that with the invention of the iPhone in 2006, our society has changed a lot in a lot of communication, a lot of ideas that are being propagated. So we have to be very careful that society is not dictating to us, which we just made that clear. And where do we find the authority? Because we are on what's called a slippery slope. Mm-hmm. We will go to like sex with animals, mm-hmm. Pedophilia, and this is like, where does it stop and who draws the line?
Yeah, I think if we're not careful, we start agreeing with society for the sake of ministry, but it becomes compromise. And ultimately, the society approves or disapproves of what we approve or disapprove of. Instead of us changing the world changes us. I think also, too, like one of the thoughts we had was, can a person be homosexual and be born again? And I would argue this. I would say, maybe the person was saved and fell into that sin. Falling into that sin does not remove their salvation. I would also say maybe the person is in that sin and they're getting delivered from that sin and they got saved as part of the delivery process. They got saved, okay, and they're still coming out of that. So the question whether a person can be a homosexual and be born again, the answer is yes, but it really depends upon the circumstances of their salvation. It also depends upon the lifestyle that they live. If they say a person was born again and became homosexual, they don't lose their salvation because they become homosexual. What happens is cycles or levels of discipline from God begin to happen in their life. And ultimately, God deals with that person. But I would also argue that person living in that lifestyle openly in the church, that person is infectious and that person can't operate in the church publicly. The question would be, we just have to be careful with labels. We would handle like any other public sin, like any other sin. It's not a different sin in that respect. But I think to the left's argument, the church is not chasing homosexuals. But to the right's argument, we're not allowing people to walk in homosexuality as an open lifestyle in our church. That's not happening. It's not just come to church and be the way you are. There is discipline. There are boundaries in the church of God for permissible lifestyles in the church of God. I don't think it's an all or nothing. I don't think it's a John 13 question, don't wash me at all, or wash me all over. But I'm confident that there are people in churches who have been in that particular sin, lesbians and homosexuals, who have been delivered from that in 1 Corinthians 4:10 and are not living in that as a practice, and they've moved on, named it and forsaked it, and they've moved on from that. And there may be some in the congregations that are also suffering with that. And our heart goes to them. They are loved by God and they are loved by the church. But the church, because of love, does not approve sin. And I think that's got to be the message. Because of love, we don't approve sin. So we don't say, well, we love you, so continue to live in that lifestyle because of love. Because truth guides love. Truth guides love. That's why love is not careless. The reason why love is not careless is because it has the boundary of truth. Ephesians chapter 4:15, we give the truth in love. I love you, but the truth is that is a sinful lifestyle. The truth is that is a harmful lifestyle. The truth is that is a lifestyle that goes against God's divine order from the very beginning. That is the truth. But I love you, and I want to help you, and I want to minister to you like you would with anybody else. Which is why I noticed in 1 Corinthians 6:9, all the way down to verse 11, Paul includes it in a catalog of sins. He doesn't just isolate and say this sin above all sins is a disqualifier for the kingdom of God. He doesn't say that. He's like sin itself is an issue. It's a problem. It's being falling into that sin does not mean you're broken. We're all broken. But your brokenness can lead you to that sin, and the sin is wrong, not the person. The person can actually get right. The person can be led to be right. He can be delivered, and God can do that. And there are many Christians that have that story.
You know, in Galatians 5:19, how the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery. So there's a sin. There's a sin that we all know what that is: adultery, fornication, right, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, and revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past. So Paul had already taught the Galatians, you know, if you do these things, you will not inherit the kingdom of God. Just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So if you practice that lifestyle, you will not inherit the kingdom of God. So it's like wrong. You cannot practice that lifestyle any more than you can adultery. How about jealousies? That's an attitude, right? That's just an attitude. That's you. Where is the change? Where is the actual evidence, the fruit of the Spirit? Where is the change if I practice such things? So this is important, because it actually is saying, and that Jesus said the gate is narrow, right? The way to heaven is narrow.
Right.
And few enter in that way. Broad is the way to destruction. So, you know, people can be angry about this position, and undoubtedly they will be. But we have to, you know, where are we going to stand, you know? But based on what God is saying. And by the way, there are Leviticus 22, verse 18. There are places where if a man lies with another man, it's an abomination. Paul is talking about it in 1 Corinthians 6:17. It was very well known sin during the time of the Roman Empire. And Paul is making a very clear statement about it. So are we. Now, we are in an age of neo-paganism, a new kind or another era of paganism that is being propagated amongst us in our culture. But that doesn't, it just means that the church needs to navigate through this period of time, understanding how to give counsel and how to guide and direct people.
That's a great word, navigate, because a lot of our listeners and a lot of young believers especially are not doing a good job of navigating that by their own admission, as far as when do I speak, when do I not speak, and when I speak, how do I speak? And we tend to, because of lack of knowing how to speak, we tend to fall on those two sides of the left and the right. We become the guy who's the hugger, and without ever addressing the issue, we hug towards it, or we fall to the other side with a shake your fist in the air. We tend to fall in those set positions because we have no position. So we don't know what to say, so we say what someone else has said.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Good, Pastor.
Yeah. I have counseled people who have this attraction, and but they don't practice it. They don't move on it. They understand what it is, and they are not giving themselves to it because they are humble. They want to do God's will, and they are looking for God and His will. And so that's a. It's the same with the man who's tempted with adultery. It's he has an attraction to another woman, but he doesn't exercise himself in it. He has the imagination or the fantasy, and he deals with it in humility before God. So what if somebody has an attraction to the same sex and like, what does it mean? But it's a temptation that I bring before God, you know, and I say to God, help me, I want to do your will. I want to live in your world. Mm-hmm. What is your will? And not rebellion, but it says in Romans that it's the result of rebellion. Hmm. So why not just change that and submit myself to God? And I have met men in every case who have come to me to talk, and I have met them, and they know that it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And they are looking for their deliverance and their way of life, and they may live a single life. Mm-hmm. But they are not exercising themselves or practicing and acting on what they would consider to be their natural disposition. Mm-hmm. But they have processed it in humility. Like what is the difference when somebody has been practiced smoking marijuana for years, and then he turns to Christ and he finds. Mm-hmm. The same. He just goes humble before God, obeys God, and finds a new life. Mm-hmm. But can he be tempted again? Yes. But how does he process that? Mm. So he learns to live and walk with God. Now, here's the big question for the program, and it is, if you are a Christian and you're very sympathetic to these people and believing that it is normal and acceptable, are you helping them?
Wow.
Are you helping them? Are they finding God? Are you helping them by reinforcing something that will produce a disease or depression or some other guilt or something else that is a judgment upon them because of their sin? Are you helping them?
Mm. That's a great question, because I think sometimes you want to help, but is that helping? Like, for instance, if you're in my house and you don't bathe and you live unhygienically and I say nothing and you could continue to deteriorate, am I helping you by letting you live that way? You're close to me. Am I helping you, or am I enabling you? And more often than not, we have to be careful in people's lives that we're not enablers, that I'm not empowering you to live in that lifestyle. And they would argue back and say, well, it's my life. It is your life, but I also have the truth. The same motivation why I would share the gospel with you. Yes, it is your life, but you can have a better life. You can have a better way. And you say, well, I was born this way. And I would answer, no, you weren't born that way. You made choices to live that way, but you weren't born that way. Because that implies that God made a mistake when he made you.
Yeah.
That implies that in God's divine design, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. In that verse in Psalm 139, it infers that God made you right. It infers that God's design for you was what he wanted. And you are inferring that God got your body design wrong, but he got your mind right. Or he got your body design right, but your mind wrong. So you're going to alter what God did because you were not fearfully and wonderfully made. You're saying that verse is a lie when you make those choices like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that doesn't mean that the culture, a child growing up being molested, a young boy having some sexual experiences by a predator, couldn't direct the child or the young person into some perverted sexual fantasy or practice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, but to be born like these lies about a homosexual gene or the gene of alcoholism and these kind of things, like, all right, the science, it's got to be there if we're gonna believe those things, and it's not, but it's in the press, and it's propagated, and these ideas are believed and then embraced. But actually, it, like you said, it might be my experience and my culture may direct me this way. And I might decide, and I might even, because of being hurt, be in rebellion against God, give myself over to being in total rebellion against God. And then he gives me over to these perversions of my heart. And I find myself in this lifestyle. And we are saying, out of love, we are saying, hold it. Are you, you know, we are bringing it into question, and we're saying no, you know, no, it's it can't be that way. No, God didn't make us this way. Mm-hmm. No, he did not. I do not believe that. And no, and I mean, the Bible is not teaching us that. So, so out of love, we are really having our convictions about it. And I would say, if you're in the working place and you are working with homosexual people, or you're in maybe even in your family, or with people that you know in life, that you are available just to talk. You're available to love them, to bring them to church. You're available to teach them the Bible. You're available to pray for them and to encourage them and give them some direction.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about, and they would open and confide with you, not in an attitude of rebellion and hatred toward you because you are different from that, but that they might be actually looking for help.
Yeah,
you know, and many of them are actually.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of mental health issues associated with that particular lifestyle. John Hopkins did a major study on that. There's tremendous mental health issues because your body is, you're saying you're this, but there's so many realities in front of you that say you're not. And there's a lot of things that have to be done to convince you that you are this. And this personal persuasion that has to happen stresses the mind. It's a lot of mental health there. It's because you're literally denying something. You're denying design. And I like what you said about those that have same-sex attractions, because that is actually the larger group. That's the group that's really being addressed by all of the propaganda and all of the messages in the media. They're not going after homosexuals and lesbians. They're validating that behavior, but they're really going after people that struggle with same-sex attraction and leading them into that. And Pastor Schaller said it very clearly. He said those kind of people, they have to, in humility, come before God and say, I want God's kind of lifestyle, and get help if you need help. If you are a Christian and you do struggle in those areas, in your church, with your pastor, with a godly friend, get counsel, get help, get support, get encouragement, get God's mind about it, be encouraged in that. And it's like this, whatever you feed will grow. Whatever you starve will die. So feed the life of God and starve that and get help in that. And you don't have to go in all the way. Like he said, there's a lot of guys that he's counseled, and I've counseled a few, that don't have to, that don't ever get there because they've got God's mind. It's like any other temptation or any other area, just it comes, okay, you recognize it for what it is and say, that's not who I am. That's not what I'm about. I want God's life. And in humility, I humble myself before God at the cross, and I die to that at the cross. And on the other side, I live my life with God.
Very good.
So
that's it's a tough subject to cover, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, it's like, I think it wasn't tough 25 years ago, but I think the world media has really taking it on as they've decided what's right and what's wrong, and they told the church, like it, take it.
Yeah.
And then I guess as a Christian, I have to struggle and say, okay, I'm not comfortable taking it, or should I take it? So how do I minister? I love what you said about having a ministry to people about it. We love you. Let's lead that way. We love you. But this is the truth. We have a biblical reality. It's not a worldly reality that shifts and changes. It's a biblical reality. Going back to the social structure laid down by God from the very beginning, it eats away at the very fiber of our cardinal doctrines. You can't be there. But there's a way, as you said, a humility to look for God, to respond to God. But getting into the side path shallow of where, say, someone is living in that, they're actually a lesbian or a homosexual, they're not same sex, but they're living in that. That's a lot more challenging because that person's in that lifestyle. And it's very, the attraction is strong. The lifestyle, it really protects itself. It's very defensive. It's very demonstrative. I have to prove to the world, because I'm really trying to prove to myself that this is okay, when everything in me says it's not.
Yeah. There's a definite, you know, when you are right about something, mm-hmm. you just are satisfied with that. Let's say, you know, an engineer builds a car, and I mean, he does it all by himself in this case, or a man builds a house, he does it kind of by himself, and he's satisfied with it, and it's like just what it is, and he's satisfied. But when you're wrong, you can get, and you're promoting something wrong, you get very aggressive, and even after you have promoted the wrong, you're restless. And this is what this gay pride mm-hmm. thing is about. They're not satisfied. You know, I think it was a date, 1984, when like they were pushing, maybe it was where homosexuality would just be accepted in society. That's all that they wanted. Mm-hmm. It would only be accepted, you know, that it would be, that society wouldn't be castigating homosexuals, you know. Mm-hmm. So now here we are, what is it, 40 years later. They are way beyond, and they're not asking just to be accepted. Mm-hmm. They are actively promoting and demeaning people that don't agree with them.
Yes.
Like, so to go back to the point, when you're an athlete in the NFL and you are a good athlete and you are satisfied and contented with that, that's where it ends. We mm-hmm. can see you are good. And that's clear, and it's there. But when you are wrong mm-hmm. and you're promoting this error, it never ends.
Yeah,
they're very aggressive and very active. So where will it end? I don't think it will. They will keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and it's very destructive to the human personality. It's destructive in the family, producing children, healthy children growing up in a healthy home, the propagation of our civilization. You know, I think it's a very small number percentage-wise, but they want you to believe that it's a big number, but it's small. We are not, but if you have a healthy family, heterosexual marriage, children, a healthy family, playing soccer, you know, Saturday afternoon, the family, there's a birthday party, whatever, like there's no issue. It's like we're at peace. Mm-hmm. we're at peace. Everything, it's right, you know, not regardless of our problems, but we are able to live our life and somehow it's right. But this other thing is very aggressive.
Yeah, they kind of figured out that the more we promote who we are, we can change who others are. Because technically, as far as people that call themselves that or in that group, it's less than 10% of our population. It's not a large amount of our population. But you would think that one out of every four Americans was gay. You would think that because of the bombardment through the media, through the movies, through the population speak, positions of authority that are held, that it would be that that's who we are. I had a foreigner, not I won't say which country, say to me, "You are the countries that make gay and lesbianisms heroes." We
really?
He said to me, "You guys make them heroes."
Yeah, no, third world. Yeah. They look at America and they go, "Wow!" But now they're like, "Are you kidding me?"
Yeah, they said to
these
me,
"People
like,
are out of their minds."
In our country, they said that's a deviant, that's a social deviant. But in this country, America, they said to me, "You guys make them heroes. We see them in movies, and they're like the hero of the movie. They're the hero." And it's shocking how we've switched, because at one point it was a social deviation. It was in Baker's Book of Psychology 35 years ago. It was a mental health social deviation, and now it's not there anymore.
Oh yeah.
But now it's, of course, and I like the point you made about accept it. The church is not saying you can't be what you want to be, but you can't make us approve of what you want to be.
Yeah.
You can't ask us to rubber stamp your lifestyle anymore. And that's any lifestyle. The church does not rubber stamp lifestyles. We all have a life with God. We're walking with God. But you don't import your lifestyle into the church and say, this is now accept. This is what the church is going to have. Because we don't teach that. We don't promote that. That's not a lifestyle that's biblical. So with this, it's not possible for you to come in and change the church, because the world says it's okay. And that's a challenge. It's a huge challenge. But I think sometimes, Pastor Schaller, we struggle with our abilities to communicate our convictions without, number one, being too soft and not addressing it,
mm-hmm.
or number two, hammering somebody. And like I said earlier, most of us, we fall on one or the other. We become the hammer or we become the pillow. And in either case, we don't help anybody and may even misrepresent Christ. It's possible to do that. Because all of us have certain sins that presuppositionally rub us the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
One guy, because of my background, that particular sin makes me angry. But there's another sin that you walk right past. But when we have convictions on a subject like this, and particularly in this season, in the holiday season, we're going to be with family and friends that normally we aren't with for the whole year. And invariably, either this topic will come up or we'll be with people who are like this or even in this sin, and we may feel led to say something. And how do we communicate that in grace but with truth?
You know, it doesn't have to be so hard, like, to talk about things that are right and wrong, because like a lot of life, we are correcting all the time. Like driving down the road, when you're at work, your boss can correct you. At school, you get corrected in your math exam, history exam. We don't say you're getting hammered. We just say, there's an open discussion. I think that's another good point. Like, what does the family think about open discussion, exchange of ideas and information? Like, are we not talking about things? And then somebody throws out this word, you know, shoving it down my throat, or you're hammering an issue or something. No, like, a lot of life is exchanging information and talking. When you go to the university, your professor is to tell you,
yep.
is to teach you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't say you're getting hammered,
right?
Mm-hmm. You're just getting information. So they use that kind of language just to defend themselves or shut down a conversation.
Yes.
You know, so how would you say, you know, like, let's talk.
Yeah.
You know, how are you doing? You know, do you feel like, you know, life is made up of decisions, right? Where do you want to live? Do you want to live in Florida? Would you like to live in California, Montana, Kansas, New York, Pennsylvania? Like, those are decisions you can make, and you live with those decisions, right? What job are you going to have? What education are you going to have? You're going to live with those decisions. You know, what kind of girls do you like? What kind of girlfriend would you like to have? Oh, you are homosexual. Oh, how is that going for you? What kind of relationships are you looking for? Are you looking for lasting ones? How do you have them? Like, these discussions and talks with people are not about hammering people. It's about exchanging information, understanding each other, and caring about each other.
I had a I was door knocking with Eduardo in Houston, Texas. I knocked on a door, the lady came to the door, and she was a bit defensive at first. It was a house full of people, and she said, "Well, I can't. I'm not Christian. I give to the church, but I don't go to church." And we talked some more, and she explained that she was a lesbian, and she said, "This is the part where you people yell at me and fight." And I said, "Can we just have a conversation? You're going to yell at me and tell me I'm going to." I said, "Can we have a conversation? So you're not going to fight with me?" "No, I'm not going to fight with you. But can we talk? Can we just have a conversation?"
Yeah.
Rather than you assume that I hate you, let's have a conversation about why I don't agree with that particular lifestyle. Can we have a conversation about why I think that way? I don't hate you. I'm not against you, but I want to show you why I feel the way I feel. Can I explain 1 Peter 3:15? Can I give a reasonable answer for the hope that is within me? Can I do that?
Yeah.
Can I do that?
Very good.
And she did not. She was, sadly, she was so used to the attack. We didn't get it really
shut down.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, because she didn't know.
Yeah.
It's the dog.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
it's the dog chasing the car. When you get there, what do you do with it? So she she got there. She's like, well, I don't want to talk right now. Okay, great. But I want you to know, I don't hate you. Or like a lady we met door knocking, in Richmond, this past July.
Okay.
She was also a lesbian, but she was smoking a marijuana cigarette right in front of me. She said, "I know you hate this, and I'm also a lesbian." And I said, "Okay, can we have a conversation?" So we started. She said, "Yeah, but you people always have your 10 rules. I mean, you mean the 10 commandments?" She goes, "Yeah." I said, "Well," I said, "somebody gave you the Bible at an early age, and they hammered you with it. And you ran in rebellion as far as you possibly could, didn't you?" She said, "Yeah." "And that led you to marijuana and lesbianism. I don't believe you started that way. I think you ran. You got hammered with the book, and you ran as far as you possibly could. And there's more to the book than just 10 rules. Can we talk about it?" She said, "I'm at work right now, but yeah, we can."
Good, beautiful.
We actually led a lesbian to Christ in South Africa years ago, in Namibia, actually. Me and Pastor Jabalani did. I think when if you're listening to us on the program today, I think if you walk in humility and you walk in the Spirit, God can lead you what to say, and you can talk to people like they're personal. Like what Pastor Tyler said, you just have a conversation with people. We're communicators of we are communicators of the gospel, but we're communicators first. So if I'm a communicator, I start from there, and then I'm led by the Spirit. And God, Psalm 13:2, I think. We have sentences from his 17. We have sentences from his presence. We speak God's life to people, and then the defense mechanisms kind of come down a little bit. It's not that I'm judging you. Let's not begin there. Let's begin with you're a person, and I'm a person, and I may think differently than you. And here's why. Here's why I think differently than you.
It's beautiful.
You know,
that's good.
Yeah,
that's good. That's really good. So the starting point is to know the truth ourselves in our heart, and then have that in our heart, and then understand people and communicate with them. It's not always one direction communication. Mm-hmm. It's a real interaction. With Jesus, with the woman at the well, he knew she had five husbands. The man she was living with was not her husband. But he let her talk. I believe there were 7 breaks in the conversation where he gave her opportunity to talk.
Excellent.
You know, so that's the approach we have. So, yeah, will we win everybody? No. Will everybody understand us correctly? No. Can we help somebody? Yes. Are some people looking for people like us who are very gentle and kind and patient and caring? Yes. Well, will they ever know that if we are not talking, if we're not approaching them, if we are not meeting them and inviting them to the church and having a church where the focus is on Christ and people have faith and maybe bow down before you, 1 Corinthians 14:23. When they see you worshiping in an assembly with your hands in the air, maybe, that's optional, singing with all your heart, a beautiful worship service, and they are like, actually maybe saying, I've never seen this before. They may bow down and say, of a truth, God is in you. That's an amazing day when that happens.
Amen. That's awesome. Being able to minister to people as a human being first, and the identity that they have before God, before you minister to them based on the life that they lead. And you get to that. I don't think you elevate this sin among other sins. If you were talking to someone else, an alcoholic, someone who smokes marijuana, a thief, it would be the same ministry. It would be the same conversation. But I think we've let the world polarize this particular topic so that as Christians, we walk on eggshells. You ever notice how sometimes you're around a homosexual or lesbian and you're suddenly different as opposed to an alcoholic? Why are you so different around them than any other sin or someone who's a liar or jealous? Why is it different? Because the environment has affected you, and there's a specific spirit with it, and it rubs you the wrong way because you haven't. You have to have a generalized view of this is just sin, this is just a person who needs Christ or a person that needs deliverance, and that's the end of it. If I don't think that way, I'm gonna have selective sins that I minister to. This guy is in this sin, I can minister to him, but I don't minister to those people over there. Why is that? Why is that so? Is that a personal preference or a spirit-led direction? I think there are a lot of people that have been helped and can be helped. I don't think we have to compromise truth to help them. But on the other side, too, I don't think we have to tap into hate. We can be convicted. We can be clear. We can be truthful without compromise. But I don't ever want my truth to hide my love. Love is the great changer in people's lives, in the truth, in the boundary of truth, right? I think this is a tough topic, to be honest, Pastor. And like I said, the right and the left, people lean hard on both sides. I think the balance is in the spirit. And you said it earlier about case by case. The balance is in the spirit in case by case. You may have someone in your family that's this way, and God may lead you to say something, and God might not lead you to say anything for a while. And by the way, I want to tell you right now, if they're that close to you, they're looking at your life. 2 Corinthians 3, verse 2, your life is loud when you walk with God. Your life is very, very loud. They can see the choices that you're making, and you have a greater impact with your life oftentimes than you do with your mouth. And on these events, these holiday events, when you show up, there's this presupposition, oh, here comes the Bible thumper, oh, here comes the Christian. They already have that in their head, but if you walk in humility and you walk in the freshness of the Spirit, you can dispel that presupposition and you can release the life of Christ without saying a whole lot of words. I don't think people's lives are changed necessarily by speeches. And you said it right, they know that it's wrong. And they know that you know that it's wrong. So there isn't this idea where I have to convince you that it's wrong. In fact, what you're going to try to do is convince me that it's right, but you already know it's wrong. The reason why you want to convince me that it's right, because you know it's wrong.
Yeah, yeah. <laughs> So
it's not like there's any mystery that it's wrong. It's like guys with alcohol. Guys would get. I found that, you know, Timothy had. I'm going to try to find a verse to prove that I'm right. Why do you want to prove it to me? Because you know you're wrong.
Yeah.
You know you're wrong. Right?
I would say somebody recently said to me that I see a healthy family. It doesn't matter the name, but I see a healthy family. Do they have problems? Sure. Are they struggling sometimes? Yeah. Is it tough raising a family? Yeah, sometimes it is. It's a challenge. But then when you see a husband and wife, they love each other. They're different. Mm-hmm. They have their places. Yeah, they have children. There's children there. That's amazing. And when you see that, and there's some kind of, even though it's like, you know, as having a family, and Sebastian knows that, I mean, it's like, yeah, are you walking on broken glass sometimes? Yeah. Is it really tough sometimes? Yeah, yeah. Okay. But there's some kind of contentment or satisfaction. It's right. You know, you have a child, but these people don't have children, you know, and they hate that. And so they push for, you know, the legal rights of adoption and so on. Mm-hmm. And then when that happens, like, you know, this is where we say, you know, young people are looking and watching, and they can decide, what do you want? What do you think is right? And when they come to the place where they say, I want that, I want that, it seems more right, more normal. It's like maybe it's God's way. Mm-hmm. I want God's way. Then that's an argument in itself. Without words.
Yes.
There's no words and no argument. There's no fighting. There's no religion. It's just looking at life, mm-hmm. like what fits.
Yeah.
And that's what we are all about. We are about it on all levels. Is hatred better than love? Is pride better than humility? Mm. Is God's mind better than man's mind? Is God's way better than man's way? So that's what we're all about.
Amen.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great program. It's going to be a great week. Pray for this week. This is an awesome topic. Our pastor's just given us a platform to stand on. We'll be standing on that all week. Thank you, Pastor Schaller. Thank you for coming and tuning in this week. You can reach us, subscribe through YouTube, Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Keep tuning in. Keep tuning in. We'll be here again tomorrow at 11, continuing on this theme, homosexuality. Here on the Grace Hour. See you tomorrow.